This is Jessica, and you're listening to the Asian Madness Podcast. Hi friends, welcome back to the Asian Madness Podcast. If you're new, welcome. I would like to believe that my newer episodes are a bit different from my very early episodes, as in hopefully better sound quality and a more natural way of narrating. If my old episodes sound kind of eh, I get it. Someone mentioned a few weeks ago that my podcast was kind of eh because it's scripted. Yes, I am definitely a scripted podcast. I need time to sort my thoughts out, or else you might end up with an episode full of like or ums. I might go crazy trying to edit that out. But I get it. I'm not everyone's cup of tea, and some people don't even like tea. So today's case was a suggestion from quite a while ago. I always worry about getting to suggestions too late and the person who suggested it might have checked out of my podcast. I'd feel kind of bad about that. I do jot down all my suggestions that come my way, so feel free to send them to my email. So thank you, Mish, for suggesting this case. I know I have quite a few Filipino listeners, and today's case will be from the Philippines. It's a messy case and will definitely show you how evil some people can really be, to varying degrees. Please bear with me as there are a lot of different names in this case, but I will do my best to present it in a coherent and, of course, respectful manner. But first, what are your thoughts on government officials and politicians? I know a lot of people think all governments are corrupt to some extent, and I tend to agree. Bribery, fraud, favoritism, these are some common things we see happening in governments. And it's almost a given at this point, so people seem less surprised and outraged when we learn about it. But what about murder? Extreme violence? These are things we don't see as often involving politicians, but it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Why would a politician want to get involved in something this drastic? Probably because they're desperate, or they believe they can weasel their way out of trouble because of their status. This is a terrifying story of Eileen Sarmenta and her friend, Alan Gomez. Two young and innocent students, where one of them unfortunately captured the attention of a monster, and the other one was somewhat collateral damage, unfortunately. Let's begin. While this case will mainly feature three important players, let's start with Mary Eileen Sarmenta, who goes by Eileen rather than Mary. She was born on September 16, 1971 in the Philippines. Not much is known about her childhood, but I tend to believe that she had a normal childhood. After graduating from high school, she went on to study agricultural studies in the University of the Philippines in Los Baños. The municipality of Los Baños is more commonly known as LB, and it is located in the province of Laguna in the Philippines, right below Laguna de Bay, and about 70 kilometers south of the capital city, Manila. While I don't love to describe what people look like, as it should not matter when it comes to crimes, Eileen was a very pretty young college student. It was said that she was a beauty queen in her university campus, and some have even described her as a head-turner. She was confident and wore very flattering clothes, which, of course, why would she not? But aside from being beautiful on the outside, she was also friendly and very charming, also belonged to a sorority in college. I did not know that that was a thing in the Philippines. Very interesting. She did well in school as well, so it does seem as if this girl had a pretty solid life ahead of her, which was then, unfortunately, cut short. This leads us to the second person of importance in this case, a young 19-year-old college student named Alan Gomez. Like Eileen, Alan was also an agricultural studies student in the University of the Philippines. Despite being a couple years younger than Eileen, the two quickly found that they had a lot in common and became fast friends. While they were friendly and were seen hanging out together quite often, it was not reported that they were lovers or in a relationship. Men and women can be just friends, right? I know some don't believe that, but as students, I think it's not uncommon to have friends of the opposite sex. Anyway, whether or not they were involved is not at all relevant. The approximate date is June 1993. 21-year-old Eileen was working on a school paper, and to help her get her story, she managed to get a face-to-face interview with none other than a man named Antonio Sanchez, who was not just a politician, but also the then mayor of Calauan, a municipality in Laguna located next to Los Baños. As mentioned previously, Eileen was friendly and charming, which definitely left a lasting impression on Sanchez, but not in a good way. So this leads me to our third player in this fucked up case, who was Antonio Sanchez. Sanchez was born on May 10, 1946, born and bred in the Laguna region. In the year 1993, he was in his late 40s. I'm not particularly interested in recounting his life. It's not because I'm lazy, but because I don't really care. All we need to know is that he's a politician in Laguna. He started off as the vice mayor in the municipality of Calauan from 1972 to 1980, then became mayor of Calauan from 1980 to 1986, and then serving another term from 1988 to 1993. He was very rich, but his wealth was thought to come from questionable means. He was a married man, had children, but don't be fooled. He was not a traditional family man despite his devotion to God and the Virgin Mary. Sanchez was completely smitten by Eileen, or so they say, but not in a good way. Sure, he was decades older than her, and not to mention, married. If he really wanted to start an affair, like a normal person, he would have tried to get her to meet him again under some lame excuse, like let's talk more about the agricultural future of the Philippines. It would have been scummy and gross, but, you know, borderline normal cheating behavior. On the evening of June 28, 1993, not long after meeting her during the interview, a few of his close friends decided to help him kidnap Eileen. Others have said that this plan was hatched days earlier, though, where these men were sent to stalk Eileen, probably to figure out where she lived and her schedule. It was not a one-man job, and God forbid Sanchez put himself in danger. So who were these close friends of the mayor that loved him so much that they were willing to carry out a kidnapping for him? George Medialda and Zolio Ama both are said to be in the police force and probably benefited from Sanchez. Luis and Rogelio Corcolón, brothers and bodyguards to Sanchez. Baldwin Brion, a relative of Sanchez. A random dude called Pepito Cahuit, presumed to be Sanchez's gardener. There were a few other guys involved, including Aurelio Centeno, Vicencio Malabanan, and two other guys who worked for Sanchez, Edwin Cosico and Raul Alorico. I know, there's like so many people involved and the names get so confusing. Don't worry though, it's not really important to remember who these guys were. But do keep in mind the name Aurelio Centeno and Vicencio Malabanan. So here's the general rundown of the kidnapping. On the morning of June 28, 1993, Medialda and Centeno started driving around in an ambulance, picking up the other men as the day went on. Why in an ambulance? I'm guessing it's because of what an ambulance stands for. It's there to save lives, not to take lives. And by turning on a siren, they can probably get away fast. Most of us would not really feel suspicious of an ambulance on the road or parked by the street. A regular white van, though? That's kind of sus. But not an ambulance. The initial story for the men getting together was a false story. They were told to go take down a local drug and weapons dealer. But once all the men had gathered in the ambulance, which at this point was in the evening, Luis Corcolón told the group that the real plan tonight was to actually kidnap a young college girl and offer her up to the mayor as a gift. In a sense, most of the guys thought they were on a mission to grab a big bad man, but it turned out to be the complete opposite. Most of them made no complaints, though, and were eager to please the mayor. So Centeno, the designated driver, took them to the University of the Philippines, Los Baños, arriving there at around 7 p.m. In a time without phones, how do you track down one person effectively? Well, they went with the old-fashioned way. Centeno was ordered to drive around the campus slowly while the other men looked around, hoping to spot Eileen. This would have been really suspicious if they weren't driving an ambulance. They spent quite some time looking but came up completely empty. Luis, I guess, was in charge of the operation Kidnap a College Girl, and he ordered Centeno around, going to different areas of the campus, hoping to find their target. They eventually came upon a Toyota Tamara van parked outside a cafe, and lo and behold, inside the van was Eileen Sarmenta and her friend, Alan Gomez. They had spotted their target, so of course, they got to work. I'm assuming everything happened too fast, and it's like, one second you're chilling in a van next to your friend, and the next second you see a bunch of random dudes threatening you with a gun. Their target was Eileen, but since Alan was also there to witness everything, they couldn't just let him go. A few of the men forced Eileen and Alan to move into the back of the Toyota van, leaving Centeno and Malabanan in the ambulance. And just like that, the van and the fake ambulance were on their way to their overlord, a place called Irai's Farm, about 25 minutes away from the university grounds. After arriving and dragging the two bound and gagged students out of the van, the men grabbed Eileen and took her up to a rest house, where the infamous mayor was at. He came out of the rest house, looking extremely pleased at what his minions brought him. He wasn't interested in Alan's presence, as long as it did not deter him from what he wanted to do. The kidnappers took their victims into the rest house, where Eileen was then taken into the mayor's room. I think you know what happens next. The sick man spent a few hours raping this young woman behind closed doors, and I cannot imagine the kind of abuse she must have endured during those hours. Those few hours must have felt like eternity at that moment. As for Alan, he was probably also scared to death because he had no idea who these people were or what they had in store for him. I guess the bad men didn't know either because Alan wasn't exactly part of the plan. He was just there. Well, it's not like they were going to let him go, right? He's seen their faces, knows what's going on. He's a huge risk to all of them. So these guys know they have to kill him, but not just yet. They took their time torturing Alan, probably thinking it was funny. They beat him up so badly that they even thought they had accidentally killed him. While all this was happening, Centeno, Cosico, and Alorico went to a separate area to sit and watch TV, not directly participating in the violence, but also not doing anything to stop it. At around 1 a.m. in the morning of June 29th, the door to the mayor's room opened, and out comes the mayor and a very traumatized and bruised Eileen. Her hands were bound, her mouth was gagged, and basically stripped from the waist down. The mayor, with a disgustingly satisfied look on his face, thanked his fellow minions for the quote-unquote gift and said, quote, "I'm through with her. She's all yours," unquote. I would say part one is where the guys stalk and kidnap Eileen and Alan. Part two would be when the two were being tortured. Now we move on to part three. The men once again threw Eileen and Alan into the Toyota van they stole and began to drive, with Centeno following closely behind in the ambulance. While on the road, I'm assuming some kind of scuffle took place because Centeno reportedly heard a shot go off in the Toyota van. The van then stopped abruptly, a couple of the men got off the van, dragging a very bloodied Allen with them. Allen was then shot right in the head, by the side of the road. His body was simply left there, and the men piled back into the van and continued on. I don't know if they had a destination in mind or they were just going where the road took them, but eventually they stopped around a sugarcane field and began to inflict further pain to Eileen. That's right, they took turns raping the young girl, taking what the mayor said quite literally. After the six men finished torturing Eileen, one of them asked Centeno if he would like to take part as well. Centeno was reportedly uncomfortable with what was going on and said no. It didn't take a genius to see that Eileen was already at death's door. The physical and emotional pain she endured that night would likely stay with her for life, if she managed to not get killed. It's a bit of an awkward situation, though, for somebody like Centeno. What if you initially agreed to participate in a crime, and you end up regretting it right as it's happening? You can either play along in a minimal capacity, which is what Centeno did, or you can stand up for what's right, but that would easily lead to the unfavorable outcome of you being killed as well. I think the heroic side of us all want to be the person who stands up and fights and somehow wins, despite it being one of you and many of them. But realistically, wanting to stay alive is normal human instinct as well, even if it means turning a blind eye to what you cannot stomach. What's next? Obviously, these men were not going to let Eileen just walk away. They made her get on her knees, and Luis aimed his rifle at her head. You know what's coming. Before the gun went off, though, Eileen had begged again for her life. Sure, she'd have so much trauma to deal with, but she still wanted to live. She had a loving family she wanted to see again, friends she wanted to talk to again. Quote, "Please, you have taken everything from me, my shame, my honor, but please, spare me my breath, it's the only thing I've got left," unquote. Thinking about the scene really makes you wonder, what kind of monsters are actually out there? How do some people end up being so horrible? The men, of course, did not give a damn about her pleas. They gagged her to shut her up, and Luis shot his rifle point blank in her face. Instead of dumping her by the side of the road, they decided to leave her body in the Toyota van, maybe to buy themselves some time. The men got into the ambulance and drove off, ready to pretend as if they hadn't just murdered two young kids.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Part 4 is the investigation. This part is pretty fucked up, but not in the same way as the murder and rape. So after the sun comes up on June 29th, Medialda, who was an officer of the law, decided to do some police work. By police work, I mean pretend to go on some search operation where they would accidentally find the bodies of Allen and Eileen. That's right. They wanted to be the ones on the case. They wanted to be the ones who made the shocking discovery. They most likely also wanted to be the ones to point the case in a complete different direction so no one could link it to these degenerates. Use their knowledge to get ahead. First, they discovered the body of a young man shot to death by the side of the road. Who they knew, of course, was Allen. Then Corcolón and Ama informed the Philippines National Police, or PNP, that the body of a dead woman with a gunshot wound to her face was found inside an abandoned van. The mayor also managed to insert himself into this investigation by getting in touch with the police chief, Major Caño, and acting like he cared. Medialda then made his way from Allen's dump site to Eileen's dump site, along with Centeno, Malabanan, and Luis. Once they arrived at the crime scene, Medialda made a whole show of trying to cover up Eileen's body as she had been completely exposed, as if he wasn't one of those to leave her lying like that. The group then took the van back to the police station in Los Baños, and it was there that multiple students saw the body and positively identified her as Aileen Sarmenta. That's kind of strange, right? Just random people allowed to see a body involved in a crime? I mean, I get it. It helps with the investigation by putting a name to the victim quickly, but it feels really casual. After the body was taken away, the van was then driven to the municipal hall, where someone was ordered to clean it, most definitely in an attempt to get rid of evidence. These kidnappers began to conduct their own investigation, questioning people living near the dump sites, asking if they had noticed anything or anyone fishy. You know, regular police work, except they were redirecting the investigation. Not only was the PNP on this case, the Criminal Investigation and Detection Group and the National Bureau of Investigation, or NBI, also began to get involved. Despite the perpetrators trying to mislead the case, it was proving to be tougher than they imagined as these bigger groups began to enter the picture, and it made them nervous. Interestingly, a witness had noticed an ambulance in the area, but whether or not it was involved in the crime, they had no clue. But it was a good place to start. This, of course, began to freak out Centeno, who was the driver of the ambulance. If push came to shove, I would bet that Centeno could be thrown to the wolves and labeled as the criminal mastermind, and just him alone. Maybe he knew that too, and so he tried to get ahead of it. He went to see the mayor, asking him for help, but all the mayor did was give him a little bit of money and to either keep his mouth shut, as in deny, deny, and deny, or make himself disappear. Centeno wasn't sure he would be able to keep quiet, or what would happen to him if the real police were to question him. So he decided to hide. More about him later. Regardless of how careful the men were, the truth of the horrid crime was starting to trickle out bit by bit. Centeno was now identified as a driver of the ambulance, but he was now missing, which made him look even more suspicious. The police also questioned a few of the other men, including Malabanan, Medialda, and Ama, as they realized the Toyota van had been cleaned without prior permission. Again, very suspicious. But the perpetrators also had a card to play. They had someone they considered a suspect, and of course, it's not any one of them. It was actually a guy called Kit Alquesa, who was reportedly a student at the same university and also the son of a general. The mayor began to really push the suspect, but it wasn't a really smart move in my opinion, because this wasn't a nobody they could pin it on and get rid of. On top of that, the real investigators didn't believe that Kit Alquesa committed the crime alone, and who do they think were in on it as well? None other than the mayor's bodyguards, Luis and Rogelio Corcolón. Mayor Sanchez didn't want to draw further suspicion, so he got the two men to surrender themselves to the investigators in mid-July of 1993. At this point, it's been about 2 weeks since the death of Aileen and Alan. Things were still progressing. Allow me to fast forward to the important bits because this is dragging on a bit. As you remember, Centeno was still on the run, but his luck came to an end on August 10, 1993, where he was captured by CIS officers. My guess is that he might have felt pretty guilty, but another part of him also wanted self-preservation. So understandably, he began to tell the police the real story about what happened that night. On August 13, 1993, Mayor Sanchez was arrested by the Rio police. He was outraged, insisted on his innocence, and pointed the finger again at Kit Alquesa. In order to prove his innocence, though, he had to provide an alibi, right? His alibi is a little bit awkward. He insisted that on June 28th, the day of the crime, he was with his mistress, Elvira, the entire day and night, where the two went to bed at 12:30 a.m. He said he woke up the next morning to go for a run and even greeted the three kids he shared with his mistress. He's reportedly always been open about having various mistresses and even having children with them. In this case, it does make sense, I guess. He'd rather everyone see him as an adulterer than a murderer. It doesn't matter what his alibi was, though, because not only did Centeno tell the police everything that took place that night, Malabanan also sang like a bird. Both of them became star witnesses for this case of rape slay. In no time, all the other men were also arrested in connection to this case, and thus the trial began. The entire trial and hearing spanned about 16 months. It was very high profile because it was pretty brutal, and it involved so many people, and to top it all off, people in power were involved. That's a terrible look. Centeno and Malabanan told the court everything that had took place that night, and Mayor Sanchez, of course, denied everything, insisting he was innocent and that he was being framed. It wasn't just Centeno and Malabanan's word against the mayor, though. Several other people also noticed a few odd things here and there a few days prior to the kidnapping, which proved to the court that this was indeed a premeditated crime. Some even testified that they had come across some men on school campus asking to know where Eileen was on the evening of June 28th. Times like these, we need to be glad that not all criminals are smart and they have a tendency to leave trails behind them. A lot of scheming and plotting took place starting from the day of the crime to the actual trial, and it's extremely complicated and convoluted. If you're interested to know all the bits and pieces, I would recommend that you check out the podcast, Super Evil. I have not listened to it because I didn't want it to affect my research and retelling of this case, but I bet they can provide you with way more info. Aside from all these testimonies and witnesses, one big thing that I want to mention is the story of Eileen's white shorts. Before all the arrests, the mayor allegedly sent a pair of white shorts to the PNP chief, Major Caño, saying that these shorts were the shorts that Eileen was allegedly wearing the day she was kidnapped. When asked where he found these shorts, Sanchez said that a gambler had found it near a national highway and gave it to the mayor as evidence. Why give it to him and not to the police, I'm unsure of, but I assume it's because it's bogus evidence. The problem with the mayor's quote-unquote evidence, though, was that the pair of shorts were found quite far away from where her body was found. The shorts were also in really good condition, which is kind of odd. Fast forward to after the arrest, the police swarmed the farm where the crime took place, and there they found pieces of fabric from the real pair of shorts that Eileen was wearing that night. When presented with this, Sanchez's response was the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I am being framed. I am innocent. Another piece of evidence that made the man look guilty was a bullet shell found at the crime scene. After some analysis, it ended up matching the rifle that Luis used to shoot both Alan and Eileen. Coincidence? Don't think so. The trial finally came to an end in March of 1995, where the judge found not just the mayor, but his minions, all guilty of the rape slay of Eileen and the murder of Alan. Sanchez and his men all received 7 terms of reclusión perpetua, which basically just means permanent imprisonment, or a life sentence, except they got multiple of those. Not just that, the mayor was also expected to pay damages to the Gomez and Sarmenta families for the pain he's caused and for obstructing the course of justice. Is this justice? I know many people don't believe in capital punishment, which is fine. But the case does not end here yet. Although he's a prisoner, he's still a man of certain power. My guess is that he's forged several weird friendships during his lifetime, dealing in shady things, and bribing was probably second nature to him. In the year 2006, during a prison inspection, he was caught with meth and weed. How he got those, I can only guess, and because of this, he was charged with possession of illegal drugs. But who cares, right? He's already supposed to be spending the rest of his life in prison. What difference does it make? Then in 2010, he was once again caught with a boatload of meth hidden away in a Virgin Mary statue. I should also point out, Sanchez is a huge hypocrite. He rapes, murders, commits adultery, but he has always portrayed himself as a man of God. I don't think he's the best face for religion, and I don't know if God is like, oh, please stop using my name. But again, God is all forgiving, so I don't know. Maybe he's cool with it. A few years later, in 2015, a raid was conducted and they took away his flat screen TV and AC unit. I don't get this at all. It's not like he can hide these gigantic appliances. There's no way the guards didn't know these things existed. I could only assume the prison guards allowed it, but the raid was conducted by some other people who were not cool with it. As if that's not infuriating enough, 2019 rolls around and the Director General from the Bureau of Corrections tells the public that he's thinking of releasing Sanchez. Why? Because in 2013, a law was passed by the Supreme Court allowing the early release of inmates who behaved well. First of all, this should not apply to murderers like him. Second of all, I wouldn't say possessing drugs multiple times is a sign of good conduct. This announcement, of course, triggered the public. The family members of Eileen and Alan were once again traumatized at having to see this asshole's name in the news. And worst of all, he might be released. Sure, he was quite old at this point, but still, where's the justice in that? They told everyone that they planned to appeal, and lots of people had their backs. Women and student groups all protested against this decision, as you would expect. In September of 2019, a hearing was held by the Senate to discuss this rumor based on the new law from 2013, which once again brought together the victims' families and the perpetrators' families. The mayor's family members, including his actual wife, stood behind him even after all these years. I can't tell whether it's because they truly think the sun shines out of his butt, or because they don't want to admit that he's a monster. Or maybe they're somehow being held hostage by this man behind bars. Who knows? They even insisted that even though the court ordered the Sanchez family to pay damages to the victims' families, they will not do so. Very cold. I guess if they do it, it's like admitting guilt. In conclusion, the government agreed that Sanchez and his pals would never see freedom again, despite this new law. On September 4th, 2019, the then President Duterte probably got fed up with this whole situation, so he just straight up fired the Bureau of Corrections director. So no, Sanchez was not released, and it was also stated that three of the men that were also involved in the rape and murder had died in prison already. That's the whole life in prison thing, I guess. As for Sanchez, he died on March 27, 2021, while still in prison. He was 72 years old, and the cause of death was not disclosed. Could have been COVID, could have been some illness. Either way, he probably suffered a bit. It's obviously not comparable to what Eileen and Alan endured, though. He also outlived them by many years, and that's just unfair. But we all know life is unfair. Something else I should bring up before I wrap this case up. Before the kidnapping even took place, Mayor Sanchez was actually under investigation for the assassination of two others, Nelson and Rickson Peñalosa, which took place in April of 1991. Why did he have these two murdered? Simple reason for simple minds. Power. The Nelson family were staunch supporters of Sanchez's political opponent. So of course, instead of campaigning fair and square, he wanted them out of the picture. Him and three others, also involved in the Eileen and Alan case, were eventually found guilty of this assassination as well. In a lot of the photos you might see online, Mayor Sanchez always seems very smiley. But knowing what he's like, his smile just comes off as creepy. It's kind of true what people say, right? That their character and personality can really affect a person's appearance. Someone with a beautiful personality can easily become more attractive. and the opposite is also true. I wouldn't say Sanchez is objectively attractive, but I mean, there's no need to judge a person's appearance for no reason. All I can say is that he looks very creepy to me. Since this was such a high-profile case, it naturally became the inspiration for different films and featured in various documentaries. So there you have it. The atrocious murder committed by a group of men who just wanted to please their boss. They could have brought him really good food, expensive wine, but no. They offered up a young woman, as if she was not a human being with a mind and life of her own. How arrogant these men are. It's truly scary to think that people are capable of such crimes. It's also a little bit debated on whether Mayor Sanchez knew that this kidnapping was taking place or not. What do you think? Was it truly a surprise gift? Or did he plan this all along? It's truly scary to think that people capable of such crimes can walk amongst us, and not like, hide in dark corners, but they're out there being politicians and police officers. With power comes greed, and the delusion that the law cannot touch you, I guess. I highly doubt the families of Eileen and Alan have truly been able to put this behind them, and Sanchez has always insisted that he was innocent. Could he be, though? Anyone with a different point of view? Please let me know. I am very interested. Either way, I sincerely hope the families of the victims are coping the best way they can. This should never have happened, but we know that predators exist among us. Their case is not the first, nor will it be the last. Thank you all again for tuning into this episode. Hopefully, I have delivered this in a way that was respectful and informative. Please be safe, and always be aware of your surroundings. Take care, and till next time.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.